This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who win it now?
Welcome in, Houston, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. John Clay Wolf is done. That means the bullpen is on for this Saturday. It's myself, Brian McDonald, found on Twitter at SatBMac. To my right, of course, is Cam Smith, found on Twitter at Clutch City Cam. Sean A. Mapes with us, as always, found on Twitter at Sean A. Mapes. And our man, Johnny Belmer, behind the glass, found on Twitter at Clutch City Cam. So, if you want to join in the conversation, you're giving me a look, Sean. Did I mess up one of our Twitter handles?
He's Third Coast Johnny.
What did I say?
Clutch City Cam.
Oh, I said Clutch City Cam twice. That's my bad. I'm sorry, Johnny. I didn't mean to do you like that.
I could be mixed up with worse people.
Yeah, I mean Cam,
thank you.
Cam's new to the show. He needs an extra Twitter plug. That's all. I'm just trying to get in there twice.
Just didn't want people to be.
I can be found on Twitter at Clutch City Cam. Sean can be found on Twitter. At Clutch City Cam.
I think you could find me somewhere on
in his mentions, at least. Yeah, in the mentions, at least. So we're going to talk. We're going to start off with the Astros here. Get into the ongoing, probably never-ending J.J. Watt conversation at some point. Of course, next hour we will have our Mount Rushmore plus one. Plus, we'll get to weigh in, Sean. You and I think, have anticipated this quite a bit. We'll get to weigh in on the Kendrick-Drake beef again. But this time, who would win in a WWE match?
Oof.
So we got to get to that
like
next hour.
Death match from back in the day.
Kind of, yeah. Not claymation. You know, this time they're going to settle it inside hell in a cell. But we're going to start off with the Astros. And if you have any thoughts you want to talk to us about with these Houston Astros and their back to back wins over the last couple of days, give us a call on the HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. So. Back-to-back wins, it feels like we're kind of in I don't know if we want to go full True Detective time as a flat circle, but it feels like we're in a repetitive loop of we're completely out because they look absolutely awful for a few days in a row, and then they get a couple nice wins, and we're like, okay, maybe they can actually do something and get back. So before we talk about some of the individual performances from the last couple of games, right now Astros 10 games under 500. Seven games back in the American League West, eight back in the loss column to the Royals. I mean, the math is not good. I mean, to get to last wildcard team, which is 89 wins for the Toronto Blue Jays, the Astros would have to go 75-49 to get to 89 wins over the final month of the season. And actually, the final wildcard this season, the Royals are on pace for 97 wins. I don't think they're going to get to 97 wins. That'd be an insane win total for the last wild card team. But it just lets you know about some of the work that's ahead of the Astros. For the positive, though, after this Tigers series, they got two more against Detroit. Nine of their next 12 against the Angels and A's. The other games in there are against the Brewers, who are first place in the NL Central, but I wouldn't classify them. You know, they're not the Braves. They're not the Dodgers. They're not the Yankees. They're not world beaters, so it's certainly a winnable game. So before we get into the individual performances, where are you guys at, Sean, as far as do you still have some glimmer of hope of the Astros at least being interesting and being in the playoff mix late into the season? Or are you ready? Are you starting to look at waving the white flag?
Not waving the white flag, but like you mentioned with the math problem, like that's the issue. It's just that I'm not going to really believe that it's probable that they make the playoffs until they go on some sort of crazy, you know, win 10 of 12 games kind of heater.
Don't they have to be above 500 before we take it seriously?
Exactly. So you know, cool. They won two games in a row. Blanco, awesome. Valdez, good. Bullpen, at least the big three at the back end of the bullpen look like they're going well. Kyle Tucker's obviously hitting the snot out of the ball. You're still, what, now 14-24?
Yeah, 10 games under 14-24.
I'm just going to need more before I start jumping up and down and clicking my heels, you know?
So, I mean, Cam, I mean, when you, I think some people, I know Jeremy brought up the 2005 Tombstone Houston Chronicle cover of Houston Astros, who started that year 15-30. So, as Sean mentioned, the Astros are 14-24. So, God, unless they go 1-6 over their next seven, which if they do.
On the table.
If not only on the table, but if they do, wait, forget anything else we say today, wave it off, season's over. But they should be, when this next seven games are over, Cam, ahead of that pace of the 15-30 Astros, who then went on to go to the World Series before they got swept by the White Sox. So where's your confidence level that they can actually turn this thing around?
I mean, I'm not going to say it's high, but it's definitely, it's up there because, like we said, yeah, they're 10 games below 500, but the Rangers are only four games above 500. And when you look at the Rangers, they score a lot of runs, but God, they give up a ton of runs. And their starting pitchers that were supposed to carry this team are not coming back anytime soon. So for me, I think the more realistic possibility is the Astros can make the playoffs if they win this division rather than get in a wild card spot. Plus, we have Urquidy coming back. We have Javier coming back. You have to believe this team because of past seasons that they have the ability to turn it around, and it is still early into the season. So I still think that there's a good possibility that they could sneak in, but I'm kind of like with Sean. I need to see something over these next 12 games, especially since it's against the A's and the Angels, who are trash. If they can take like 8 out of 12, then I think they'll be in a really good spot.
So when would you be willing to wave the white flag then? What's the point? I think a lot of people usually talk in baseball like Memorial Day. Memorial Day is the day that you look at the standings, see where you are, and kind of assess what sort of team you have. I mean, that 12 game stretch would finish before Memorial Day. So are you looking at this 12 game stretch where if they don't go, let's say, like you said, 8-4, if they don't go 8-4 or better, you're like, okay, nah, this is over.
I think for me, it's after Memorial Day because I think Memorial Day is like the generic spot if you're looking at a team that's been relatively healthy, which this team has not been healthy all year. So I think that there's a little more leeway, maybe more into like mid-June. Oof. But that's kind of where my end date is. If they're not at least close to 500 or at least maybe in like the second spot in the AOS, then that's kind of when I'm like, okay, maybe we need to look towards next season.
What is your white flag moment, Sean? Is there like a certain games under 500, a certain games behind the Rangers? At what point will you officially declare, you know, pound your fist on the table, this season is over?
Yeah, I mean, if they're still not in shouting distance of 500 when in, I don't know.
Define shouting distance.
Like five games.
Okay, all right. So currently not within shouting distance.
No, not at all. And they're going to need some work to get there. And yeah, it's going to be, like we're mentioning, like the month of May is really what's going to make or break it. So I guess the easy thing is to see where they're at the end of May. Like you went through, they play Oakland 7 times this month. They play Milwaukee. They play the Angels. And then the month ends with the series in Seattle, 4-game series in Seattle. I feel like that when that Seattle series starts, or maybe at the end of that Seattle series, I feel like we should know our answer because if they're going to make up ground, they're going to make up ground against the schedule. And if they can't make up ground against this schedule, then I don't know what I'm supposed to believe in at that point.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I'd like to combine both of your thoughts there. I think if they can go 8-4 over this, well, let's say win the Tiger series, so win one of these next two, go 8-4 over that 12-game stretch we talked about, and then go win the series at Seattle to close out May and begin June, then I'd be willing to say, okay, they're back on track to be able to do what we'd hope they would do. But failing that, I would be willing to officially declare the season over. So let's get into some of these performances from both last night and the last couple days. Framber Valdez, pretty good last night, 7 innings, 2 earned runs. But it's kind of been the story this year. Obviously, he had a stint on the injured list in between all this. But it's kind of been the story of last year where it's been good start, bad start, good start, bad start. And just the inconsistency is driving me crazy. So you look at his game logs, that first game of the season against the Yankees, 4 2/3. He gives up 3 earned runs, not a good start. Then he goes out, 7 2/3, shutout. Great. Okay, cool. Framber's back. Next start, okay, just five innings, but two earned runs, so it's not technically a quality start, but I think I'd be fine with that. Then he goes out 5 1/3, 5 earned runs. Terrible. Then last night against the Tigers, 7 innings, 2 earned runs. So I don't know if we've got an answer so far with what Framber Valdez is. Is this any different than last year, Sean? But so far, you look at the game log, it pretty much looks like the very up and down Framber that we saw last year.
Yeah, it definitely does. And there is a little bit of the injury taking him out of the rotation for a little while. So maybe that's why it doesn't seem as jarring as last season, where it was snip, snap, snip, snap. There's a break in the middle. And
where he threw a no-hitter?
Yeah. No, I mean this
year. Oh, you mean this season with the injury. Okay.
And there are just so many other things going wrong with the team that it honestly, being a good starter for half your starts in the 2024 Houston Astros rotation so far, that's pretty good. If you can be good in half your
good
starts.
Good enough to get you off the disappointment list.
Yeah,
yes.
there's way easier targets than Framber. But yeah, I mean, you're going to need a consistency from Framber that he just hasn't shown since 2022. And so what we're getting right now, better than some of the rotation, as it gets healthier, you're going to need Framber to be a top end starter, because like we're saying, this team has no margin for error anymore. They don't have the, Framber didn't have it tonight. He gave up 6 earned runs and hit a guy. Like, there's just no
intentionally probably.
Yeah. Yeah. After the 6th run, he hit someone and they got pulled. Like, there's no margin for those. Like, well, that kind of happens with Framber. He needs to be one of the best pitchers on this team and in baseball for this team to get out of the hole that they dug themselves in.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, Sean. I mean, you're kind of past the part of the season where you can dismiss, oh, they lost 3 out of 4, or they lost 4 out of 5. Like, okay, that's enough at this point to just be that. That's it. It's over. And so, Cam, when you have the up and down nature of Framber that we've seen so far this season, and then tack on to that Justin Verlander giving up literally the most earned runs he's ever given up in a start as an Astros pitcher against the Yankees, 7 earned, just serving up absolute meatballs that got belted over the walls of Yankee Stadium. I mean, how are you feeling about this up and down nature of Framber, and then maybe any signs of worry with Verlander and how badly he got rocked against the Yankees?
I mean, I think with Framber, it's a little concerning because it's coming over from last season too. You know, last season we hadn't really seen that from Framber. And we thought it might have just been because they changed up some of the things that pitchers could do on the mound. But then he started doing it this year. And I think this year it looks worse than maybe what it is, just because the bullpen has been so inconsistent. So Framber hasn't been able to rely on that deep bullpen to where if he does have a kind of like a shaky outing, it doesn't look so bad. But we don't have that luxury this year. So that kind of goes back to what Sean was saying. There's no room for error.
Yeah.
So like this whole pitching 2 great games and then a bad game, 2 great games, like he can't do that anymore. But the only problem is I don't think anybody's figured out why this has been like this with Framber the last year.
I mean, I feel like we kind of know what's in his head, don't we? I mean, we saw. I mean, maybe this is being like a fake tough guy analysis on a radio show, but we saw what happened in the Minnesota Twins playoff series where they're yelling at him from the dugout, led by Carlos Correa, his former teammate, and obviously getting to his head to the point where he's rattled on the fields. I mean, I don't want to say I don't trust the guy, but when you see what you saw last year carry over to this year, and a guy that's been or had a track record of being able or getting rattled on a frequent basis, I think this is probably who he is, and hopefully you get more of these good starts than the bad. But if the Astros are in a position where they have to put on or go on a run and avoid these droughts, the up and down nature of Framber could be a problem.
Yeah, and this is exactly who he is. Like you said, you said you don't want to say you don't trust him. I don't trust him.
Okay,
I have no problem.
You know, you're right. I should have gone further. I don't trust him
because I mean, how often does he have to prove like who he is for you to believe that this
I still
is,
have that 26 consecutive quality start. I know it's 2 years ago
for
now.
A lot of these other guys, like you mentioned Javier, Verlander having his worst start as an Astro, That's his worst start as an Astro in the five or however many years.
Since August 2017.
Yeah, and so then you have Fromber, who's been this guy for the last 18 months.
Yeah.
You kind of have to.
It's not a small sample
you
size.
You
kind of
have to believe him when this is who he is. So there's some guys that are small sample sizes. Like, I think a lot of the back end of the bullpen were like Josh Hader just not being able to get out a clean inning until the last two starts or the last two appearances. Like, that to me feels like a blip when you look at his baseball reference page and he sees
one. Saying back of the baseball
back card? Of the card?
Exactly. Look at the back of Fromber's card. It's not that pretty recently.
No, it's not. All right, that's a lot of negative we got into segment one. Let's actually talk about some of the positives, especially on the offensive side. Some hitters really hitting well this season and carrying it over into the series against the Tigers. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen with the producers here of ESPN Radio. Just watching a little Memphis Showboats, Arlington Renegades. I got it right.
Renegades,
I can see the end zone graphic there. As Cam pointed out as we were watching this during the break, this is a battle of 0-6 versus 1-5. On the ESPN. Maybe this should have been put on the Ocho. I don't know if this is main ESPN worthy.
Sal Canella, 9-yard touchdown reception for the Renegades. So everyone's fantasy football.
Man, you beat me to the joke,
everyone
Sean.
Go check your fantasy football.
Damn it, Sean. You beat me to the joke. I was going to say, I'm glad I started in my flex for my UFL fantasy.
I'm just glad I didn't bet the over on this.
Yeah, well, 1-5. And man, if you're betting a game between 1-5 and 0-6 in the UFL, that's
stop. Get some help.
Oh, I know some people.
I'm pretty sure when we were at LeBurge, I think we passed by some 1-800 numbers for the help that
yes,
you'll need.
We definitely did.
Which, by the way, we'll be out at LeBurge. Sean, I believe you're not coming along.
No,
with us.
I have to go to my brother's high school graduation.
Oh,
I know.
What a loser.
I know.
Putting his graduation on the same day as LeBurge. But Cam, myself, and Joe George will be out at LeBurge Casino next week doing the show from 12 to 3, I think. We usually last time we were at LeBurge, we did 12 to 3. So we'll be on the air live from Louisiana next week. But carrying over the Astros conversation as we are continually distracted by this barn burner between the Renegades and the
tight
Showboats.
Window. Tight window to Canella, by the way.
Look, I'm just going to say that was an NFL throw, okay?
No, it was a UFL throw.
Bring him up.
I don't know, man. I've seen some of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm just saying maybe he's better than Tyrod Taylor. That's all I'm saying. But some of the offensive weapons here on the Astros, that sounds like a football term, offensive weapons, but been playing pretty well despite the Astros' 10 games under 500 record. Let's start with Kyle Tucker, who, man, I don't know I'm equally torn because there's part of me that's like, oh my God, he's on pace for 51 home runs, like this amazing season. We're witnessing history, hashtag. But at the same time, like every time he hits a home run, I just see like a little ticker in my head going up for that next contract. And like, yeah, he's not coming back. Still not coming. No, definitely not coming back. I mean, he's not going to hit 50 home runs. I think we can ignore the on pace, but I don't think a 40-30 season is, you know, completely impossible. And if he gets there or anywhere close to that, let's say it's even 30, like 35-30. I don't know where you guys feel about this, but his contract's going to be what, at least $300 million plus? There's no way the Astros are bringing him back on that.
I don't care. You have to bring him back. I mean, 35-35 or whatever.
Jim Crane's money?
Yep, sure am. That's Acuna numbers. Like.
Well, Acuna was 40-70.
Very true.
Acuna was
very, very true.
Like a completely tier on his own.
It's so rare these days to get guys that get in that 35-35 or 40-40 club.
Sure.
And not only that, but Kyle Tucker's also exceptional on defense.
Yeah, he's won a gold glove.
I get this team is very timid in terms of spending a ton of money because we've seen how that's depleted the team years ago when they did it. But Altuve's getting up there in age. Jordan, obviously, he's not getting up there in age in terms of Altuve, but there's always that kind of injury concern with Jordan. So it's just kind of like, who else would you bring back to keep this team rolling?
No, you're not wrong. I think if they want to extend, you know, this, I don't know. I feel like I can't really say extend the dynastic run with a currently 14-24. But if they want to keep whatever window remains open to them alive, you can't let Tucker walk. I just don't see any way they would possibly consider paying him what he's going to get paid, because Jim Crane has kind of forced himself to this, like, 6-year maximum. Like, Kyle Tucker's not taking some 6-year deal. I mean, Kyle Tucker, if the Astros, if let's say you flip their record, I'm not saying there's reason to, but let's just say you put Kyle Tucker in that situation. They're 24-14. He's what in the MVP race? Or the, well, MVP conversations may, there's no race yet. But he's the guy that's put
he's
himself,
there, yeah.
You know, like, okay, maybe this guy's the guy that we should look out for to get some MVP votes and possibly even win it. That guy's not coming back on a 6-year deal.
No, I mean, I don't think he was coming back on a 6-year deal before the season. Like,
yeah,
before
probably
the,
not.
Before
no,
this,
probably not.
This run that he's had. So, well, yes, I agree with Cam that, like, this is a kind of the type of player that you just re-sign no matter what the price is. Like, if you're going to be a serious big spending team that's trying to win a World Series, like, there really is no reason to let him walk for nothing after next offseason. But at the same time, the Astros have proven that's just not what they do here, Brian. And so,
yeah, that's honestly not Astros baseball, Sean.
Yeah, it's not Astros baseball. And so when you say that every time you see the number go up, every time he hits a home run, I mean, to me, I'm not even worried about that. I'm worried about seeing the number at the bottom right-hand side of the screen go up, because the Astros need every single one of the home runs that he's been hitting lately.
Yeah.
They need every single bit of production that they can get out of him. And if I'm already mentally like, he's not going to get re-signed, so you have to maximize the window of trying to get to 500 this season.
God, this is sad.
You have to maximize that. Like, you just, I hope he's the greatest player in baseball for the next two years, and then gets a crazy deal to go play somewhere else, because I know
even for the Vegas A's.
Well, okay, let's not go nuts here.
What a gamble!
They'll still be in Sacramento,
right?
But I know that he's, no matter what how he performs, he's more than likely not going to get re-signed unless there's a drastic change in what Jim Crane is willing to do.
Well, to the point of the big contracts, yeah, we haven't seen it recently, but that's because it's the last 7 or 8 years since they've been winning, it's been, okay, well, we have another guy, next man up, so why do we need to give these big contracts to these guys? We're not really in that situation anymore. Like, who is the next man up in the outfield?
It'd be Jacob Melton.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
That doesn't excite me, though.
Like, I know. No, I'm with you. I'm just...
I think that might play into the favor of keeping Tucker, because we don't have that luxury anymore. And Tucker, I feel like, is a guy that you can build around. So even if they do, after this year, start to slump and suck for 2 or 3 years, you're still going to have Altuve, Jordan, and then Tucker, who's going to be younger, so I think that you can build around him a little bit more. Maybe I'm just being too hopeful, but I just feel like the situations with the contracts are a little different, because we don't have that next man up opportunity that we had in the last 4 or 5 years when they won the 2 chips.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jim Crane's going to be put to the test. I mean, the what was the thing he said a while back? Like, the window is the entirety.
The window is always open when I'm here.
Yeah, something along those lines. It's going to be put to the test. I mean, this is a city that's let basically everybody walk. George Springer, Carlos Correa, Gerrit Cole, Charlie Morton. I mean, the list goes on and on. Carlos Correa. They've let everybody walk. And you're going to be forced with the decision here on Kyle Tucker, because Kyle Tucker, I mean, Altuve obviously has had a good offensive season. Jordan at times has played pretty well, but he's been a little bit inconsistent. Kyle Tucker's carrying your team, and he's carrying your team to a team that's 10 games under 500. Look, Kyle Tucker's played every single game of the Astros season. He hasn't had a day, no days off, Dusty. Wow. He hasn't had a day off. Jordan hasn't had a day off. Altuve hasn't had a day off. They're not doing the days off Dusty thing anymore. Kyle Tucker is not going to stay on a 51 home run pace. I think we all agree with that, right? So man, it's just the mental gymnastics we were trying to do to get this team to a spot where they're actually contending is exhausting, because you have to then also factor in the idea that Kyle Tucker's pace is going to drop off at some point. If we all agree that he's not going to hit 51 homers, someone else is going to have to step in when he inevitably maybe comes back, not all the way down to, let's say, a 29 home run pace like he hit last year, but let's say 35, maybe even 40 home runs. Someone's going to have to pick up that slack when he inevitably drops off.
Is it asking too much for Alex Bregman to maybe hit better than 200?
Can we get him to hit 220?
Is that? I feel like there's some very easy gains that we can.
In theory, Sean, sure, but I mean,
for most of the record, they're starting Jose Abreu at first base. Having a competent first baseman would be a nice start. Third baseman would be a nice start. Having Singleton's a competent fifth starter would be a nice. But like, there are ways that this team can improve just by getting MLB competency around Altuve, Tucker, and Yordan, but we just need to actually see it.
Yeah, like Jose Abreu, this is something Jeremy Brandon was following. Jose Abreu was on pace to like double the worst WAR of all time.
That's why it's a hard record to break, is because if you're that bad, chances are you get options.
you get sent to
it's
Florida.
Hard to just actually play the entire year.
Yeah, you get
being
sent
that
to spend
bad
time with your family in Florida. We got
one. Yeah, he's working on bat speed. All right?
Yeah, the batting cage is back.
He's too buff to have bat. I don't
look
know.
At him.
I can't. David Brown just needs to stop talking. All right.
I don't want to.
I want to
off.
Talk about Jeremy Pena, but let's go out before I
Speaking
talk about
too buff.
Jose Abreu, apparently he's got bad speed, but now he's too buff to have bad speed. I don't know what the hell Dana Brown's talking about. Well, we'll talk about more about the Astros when we get back on the other side of the break. Bullpen returns in a few minutes on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
For the block, boy. Take it rough.
This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. If you have any thoughts on the Astros or what we're about to talk about next segment with J.J. Watt, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. You can also reach us on Twitter. I'm at Sack by BMAC. Sean is at Sean A. Mapes. Johnny Belmer is at Third Coast Johnny. Third Coast Johnny. I'm getting it in twice since I messed it up last time. And Cam Smith is on Twitter at Clutch City Cam. I should have read Johnny's Twitter handle for Cam to make up for it, but I didn't think about that until after I said it. Anyway, happy Mother's Day weekend to everyone except for Sean's mom, because Sean does not believe in Mother's Day. We found out during the break.
Twisted my words.
He doesn't believe in Mother's Day.
No, I just
mom, get your own damn flowers. I will not celebrate you.
I just thought it was
who doesn't love their mom?
Apparently, Sean.
I just thought it was interesting that the UFL was doing Mother's Day messages like when the NFL plays on Thanksgiving and it's the UFL on Mother's Day.
Why don't you want to hear from the third wide receiver of the Memphis Showboats about his thoughts on Mother's Day, Sean?
Because I have the over.
Wow.
And he's killing me
right
now.
Good luck with that one.
He's killing me right now.
Do you have the over the Mother's Day mentions?
No.
See that? See? He bet the under on Mother's Day mentions. He really does hate Mother's Day. Anyway, all right, one final segment here about the Astros. I'm going to get back more into the positive. I tried to start positive last segment with Kyle Tucker, and then I think this is a sign of the way the season's going. The positive Kyle Tucker conversation officially derailed into the negative of not going to sign him. He's going to regress. They can't do anything.
You started I get upset every time he hits a home run because the price just went up.
I'm not blaming you. I'm blaming myself. It's just kind of the nature of the season. Like anytime you try to talk about positive, you're like, oh my God, 10 games under 500. Deep breath. But one of the positives here as we try to regroup, someone who would definitely have a message for his mother on Mother's Day's weekend, Jeremy Pena, hard hands. Two more hits last night. Look, I mean, they moved him all around the order. Like, he was hitting, I think, to start the season 8. They're moving up to 7, 6, 5. Now he's hitting the cleanup spot and done well. I think I want to official or give an official apology to Jeremy Pena, because leading up to the season, coming off of last season where his batting average was a little bit up, but his power numbers completely fell apart. Didn't have a home run from like mid-July to the end of the season, didn't have one in the playoffs. I was completely out of Jeremy Pena. I didn't believe in this thing, whatever he was doing in spring training of fixing a swing. I thought the power was gone. But he's been great this season, hitting .338, has an .850 OPS. His OPS plus, which if you don't know what that is, basically they make 100, you know, the complete average across the league. So whatever you are above 100 is, you know, obviously above average, below 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, is under average. And his OPS plus is 146. His rookie season where he hit 21 home runs, it was a 102. So he's way beyond that rookie season as far as his power. When you're looking at his OPS plus, where he hit 21 home runs that rookie season. So Jeremy Pena, I apologize to you. You're having a great season. If you weren't having a great season, the Astros might only have 10 wins right now. I don't know where they would be because you could argue he's been their second best offensive player this year behind Kyle Tucker. Maybe you would say Jose Altuve. But Jeremy Pena has been great this season and one of the truly remarkable silver linings of the season so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, the power numbers is really what's the most...
Three months without a home run last season.
Yeah, that's the biggest change in what he's kind of, I guess, added to his game, or at least fixed out or rediscovered it from his game from the 22 home runs he hit his rookie year. And he's kind of right back on that kind of, not to be the on pace show, but you know, you hit 4 home runs in 40 games. Like you're back to kind of being at the 20 home run
about season. That, yeah.
So I think that yes, Pena has been second or third in the Astros lineup. As far as especially consistency, when you factor in like how consistent he's been, because he hasn't really had a, you know, like Yordan. Yordan was very good to start the season, and then recently up until
last couple games.
Thursday's game, Thursday's game, he was slumping. Pena so far this season has not had a slump of any sort of length of time where we go, huh, what's going on with Pena? And I mean, that kind of consistency, when a team like the Astros have had so many things that go wrong, you not being part of the things going wrong at any point in the season is really, really valuable to this team.
When I think, this might sound silly, but I think people look at Jeremy Pena and they're like, holy crap, this dude is yoked. He should be hitting 30, 35 bombs. Like, that's just not, that's not his game. And I think last year, I think he was trying to swing for the fences, which is why we saw all those swings and misses at like those outside pitches and those sliders. He was just trying to yoke the ball out of the stadium. And this year, I think he's just kind of dialed it back down. He's just trying to swing for contact, which is why we see his average at 340. Like, I never thought I would see Jeremy Pena's average at 340. And it's not like it's just over like 10-game season. Like, we're already, 30, 39, 40 games into the season, and he's hitting at 340. And then not to mention 6 stolen bases. Like, I don't know about y'all, but it seems like he got a little faster since last season.
Maybe so. I mean, yeah.
I think it's
the rules help out, too.
Yeah, I think it's the rules and Espada, I think it was like basically the first day of spring training, they talked about being more aggressive on the base pass.
Yeah. So he certainly wants to run more than Dusty.
Yeah, it might just be he's showcasing it more. But yeah, I mean, it's another thing that Pena is it's something where you're maximizing what Jeremy Pena can do if you're using his speed on the base pass. And then when he figures out his bat, now he's one of the best shortstops in the American League.
Yeah. Well, and back to like just making contact, like, he has 21 strikeouts, which is less than Yordan, Altuve, Tucker. Like, last year, Pena was striking out at a high rate, and this year his rate has dropped dramatically. So I don't know. I don't know if he adjusted his swing or not. But
he worked on it in spring training.
It just seems like he's trying to just get on base instead of swinging for the fences, and it's working out for him.
Look, I don't think a .338 batting average is sustainable over a full season. Kind of like I don't think Tucker's 51 home run pace is sustainable over a full season. But the Astros wouldn't even. I think we would have waved the white flag if it wasn't for the performance of Jeremy Pena so far this season. Like I can't see what this offense would even look like if he's not playing to the level he's playing it now. Now he just needs some of his teammates to join him. One of his teammates that is hitting pretty well. I mean, .227 batting average, but John Singleton, look, I think we pretty much ignore the batting average. He's got an OPS plus of 110, so he's above average there. He's actually, I mean, well, the one thing Alex Bregman you can usually count for him, even when he's slumping, is getting on base through walks, and Singleton's walking more than Alex Bregman. And when he connects, he's hitting the ball off the facade of the third deck at Yankee Stadium. So when he connects, he can, you know, it'll go, I believe it was like 445 feet, I believe was the projected distance on that home run on Thursday. So I'm looking at John Singleton. The batting average is high enough to where I can live with it at 227. The OPS numbers are good. The power's there. He saved Josh Hader on Thursday in what could have been a disastrous end of that game, where Josh Hader fielded through to first and Singleton saved him and bailed him out by picking up the throw over to first to get the first out of that ninth inning. I don't think there's anything Jose Abreu there's nothing Dana Brown could come on and say, well, Jose Abreu's doing this in Florida against minor leaguers. He's ready to come back up. If Singleton is playing at this level or better, there's nothing I could hear about what Jose Abreu is doing in Florida that would make me want to call him back up.
No, because there's not a single thing that Abreu was doing better and seems like will do better than what you're going to get out of John Singleton. Like, sure, Abreu's got the name and, like, have we referred to baseball or basketball reference or the back of the baseball card? But when Singleton's doing what he's doing, just roll with it.
Yeah, like, Not the glove is like a separate thing that, yeah, Jose Abreu has never really been the glove guy.
He had like four errors. There was a point where he had four hits and three errors.
Yeah, and Singleton, like you said, the play he made against the Yankees, like, that is just not a play I've ever seen Abreu make.
No.
And so that is its like own thing. But then you look at Singleton's last 10 games, that basically lines up perfectly when Abreu got optioned down to the minors. Like you said, the batting average, 212. Well, the last 10 games.
Oh, last 10 games. Okay.
212. And then the OPS, 884.
Yeah. Like,
there's nothing Jose Abreu can do that makes me think that he will have an 884 OPS.
And you don't,
OPS.
The Astros don't owe Abreu anything. Like, this would be different if
it was
like.
Well, they owe you millions of dollars.
They owe millions of dollars, but playing time, like, this isn't like Yordan coming back up or Altuve where it's like you have to get him back into the lineup.
Or like, or it's not. That's the reason he gets optioned and Bregman is like still starting and just now, what, 4 games ago, just now getting moved down in the lineup.
Yeah, for the first time, like I think he got moved down to 6.
Yeah, that was the first time he'd hit his rookie year.
Yeah, the first time he'd hit below 4 all season. And you say since his rookie year?
Yeah, I think it's wow. Some crazy, like, or maybe 2017. It's a long time.
Anyway, so more NFL throws going on in this UFL game. Renegades up 14-3. So, Sean, you had the over in this game, right?
Yes.
Well, what was the over set at? Was it like
45.5.
Cam got it 46.5. Oh, man, you should have bet the number that Sean bet. That's Cam, that's bad work on you, man.
Defense wins games.
Like, not in the UFL. Have you watched many UFL games?
Yeah, the closing line was 45.5.
But, yeah, John Singleton's going to have a low batting average, right? Like, I don't think any of us have illusions. Like, even 227 feels like it's on the upside.
He's a modern day Chris Carter.
Yeah, kind of.
But hitting a little higher.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's like his on base is still over 300.
Yeah, so, like I said, he's walking at a higher clip than Alex Bregman. He, as Sean said, his OPS is over 800. His OPS plus is over the average line. There's no way that I can be convinced, based upon what he's doing in Florida, hanging out with his family and hitting against minor leaguers, that this version of Jose Abreu at age 36, 37, whatever he happens to be, can hit at this level of what John Singleton's at. I don't know what you guys feel about this. I feel like Dana Brown, I think Cam, you said this, like, it's not like you don't owe Jose Abreu anything. This is not Jose Altuve, you know, being called back up or something. But I don't know. I kind of lean on the side of Jim Crane, Jeff Bagwell, this Astros panel of a front office. You know, I don't know who all it includes. It seems to grow in numbers day by day. But I think there's a part of them that's not going to be willing to admit that they're wrong about Jose Abreu. So if he does show signs of life, I use in air quotes, hitting in Florida against minor leaguers, I think they're going to force him back up onto the roster at some point, whether that be at first base or whether that be DH because Yordan is in left field. I don't want to be right about that, but I think they're going to force it at some point.
They could. They definitely could, and I think.
Would you put that beyond what we've seen from this front office?
No, but I will say when they do bring back Jose Reyes, chances are the white flag has already been up on the season.
White flag will be attached to his jersey.
If not, yes. If he's
like
not,
J.J. Watt running out to the field
with the American flag.
Jose Breu's running out of it.
Yeah, it's
waving
just like
the white flag.
A car dealership sized white flag. That
like Orban does at the end of the games. He waves the big Houston Astros flag. That's what they're doing. Jose Abreu's running out on the Minute Maid surface, waving the white
with
flag
with that Pirates of the Caribbean beard waving in the wind.
But at a certain point, like if this season doesn't go the way that the Astros want, I mean, like you said, there's nothing you can prove playing in Florida against minor leaguers that make you think he's ready. Might as well call him up to the majors and just let him sink or swim for next year as a way of getting him ready for next year if winning games just no longer matters.
But like that's
the
thing.
That is
like,
the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Even
John.
if they're trash,
you're not wrong. But that's the saddest thing.
And let him chase history.
For the negative OPS number the negative WAR number. You're right. Sorry, Cam. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, but even if they're trash, it's like why even bring him up? Like, see what Singleton can keep doing. See what Loperfido can do at first, because Loperfido technically, I think, started off as a first baseman and then
He was the first baseman in college, outfield. But he hasn't played it much in the minors. Sorry, I'm distracted. Arlington just
because I know
pass.
He played a little bit of
they're,
first baseman.
They're in scoring position, Sean. So I think we're going to hit this over.
Offense.
I don't know if you're going to hit your over, Cam, because you got it a much worse number. Well,
you need to start going for twos and threes. That's what you need.
All right,
make this a field goal game.
I mentioned J.J. Watt and just a minute ago. Let's talk about J.J. Watt. The will he, won't he has not died with his possible return to the Houston Texans. We'll talk about that next in the bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Oh, Arlington scores again. Oh, no, they're marking them down. Damn, Sean, I hope they still get in. This is really going to be the first to go.
Startled me.
I know. Man, look, I'm invested in this. I'm wanting you to hit this over, Sean. I mean, I don't want Cam to hit it because he got it a bad line. I'm invested in your over, was it 45 and a half?
Good back shoulder throw.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to say it. Hashtag NFL throw. That's you know what? Actually, that might be a new gimmick. I'm going to watch UFL games. It just critique which throws are NFL throws. Anyway, all right, let's move on and talk about actual NFL football. J.J. Watt, former Texans, great, played for the Arizona Cardinals for a couple seasons.
I like talking about actual NFL football. The next word out your mouth is a retired NFL player.
Good point. Well, he's talking about actually playing NFL football again.
Yeah, maybe he's not retired for long.
So we've got a couple of clips of audio, Johnny, here that we're going to play. One where he talks about, like, hey, yeah, I think I'm back. And then he kind of walks that take aback a little bit and kind of poo-poos on the idea of him actually returning. So let's hear first. J.J. Watt apparently told D'Amico that he could be ready for a comeback.
Don't call unless you absolutely need it. But if you ever do call, I'll be there. He knows not to call unless he absolutely needs it. This is the last year I'll tell him that, because I'm not going to keep training the way I've been training. But he knows that if he ever truly does need it, I'll be there for him. But
so that was the first clip where he seems to indicate that, like, you know, if D'Amico needs it, you know, I'll be there. But in this next clip, he clarifies his comments, seems to walk it back a little bit.
Similar to the one we were just talking about, where you got to watch the full video for the context. I was asked about it. I told them the conversation D'Amico and I have had before. And I very clearly in that stated that they have no need or use for me whatsoever right now. They have a phenomenal defense built. They have a phenomenal team built. They're perfectly fine. It literally was last year and this year, if it came down to an absolute dire situation where they needed somebody to help out, I would do that. But that would be... I don't think people fully understood, like, the how much stuff would have to happen for that scenario to play itself out.
So hearing that, I mean, I instantly put myself back in where the Texans were last year with Will Anderson being hurt towards the end of the season, Jonathan Greenard missing a couple games with the ankle injury. They didn't have some of the stars, obviously, that they do now, like Danielle Hunter. Weren't the Texans in that dire situation that J.J. Watt mentioned last season?
And J.J. was at the facility working out with them around that time, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, when I hear these quotes, when this first started, you know, going around, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, well, the Texans, I think, could have a need. We don't know who their second defensive tackle is. I could see J.J. Watt as a sub-package defensive tackle. Oh, my God, Arlington just threw a halfback pass for a two-point conversion. You hashtag NFL throw.
I needed that one.
Hashtag NFL throw.
Do I need to go in there and turn the TV off?
You might. This is just going to be an Arlington. This is going to be just an Arlington Memphis Showboats side broadcast here.
What a throw by Devon Smith.
I mean, you got 22 points in 11 minutes to go in the second, Sean. You're looking good for your over. Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Is he really? The halfback pass.
That's why we're so invested.
Obviously, that's the only reason. No money's being wagered here. But yeah, so J.J. Watt, when you look at last year's situation, I do think there could be a need from him on this year's team because, as I said, there's your second defensive tackle. Not any star power there. The Texans play a high percentage of sub-package and nickel sets where J.J. Watt could be used as a third-down pass rusher on the interior, I think. So there could be a need this year. But when you listen to his own words where he says it has to be – I mean, he really sells the idea. This has to be a dire situation. The Texans were in one last year, so to me, I think this comes off as J.J. Watt wants to get the headline that he could play. But he doesn't actually really want to play.
Well, why would it need to be a dire situation? Because if the Texans are winning and they call you, wouldn't you want to come back and possibly make a playoff run and win a championship with them? So like I don't really know how I'm supposed to take what J.J. Watt is saying. I guess it would make more sense.
I think you're on to what he's saying, Sean.
I think what it really is yes, it was a dire situation last year. Last year's team wasn't winning no Super Bowl. This year's team might be winning a Super Bowl.
Is he just Kevin Durant?
If they get desperate, just know my phone's on. I think
is he Kevin Durant-ing this?
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, more power to him because like he wasn't gonna make a comeback just to lose in the divisional round. Maybe they lose instead of what was it like 30-10? They lose 27-10, 24-10 because they have J.J. Watt out there. Now this team, got Joe Mixon, got Stephon Diggs, Danielle Hunter, like the draft picks. Okay, you know what, D'Amico Ryans, I am available this year only though, because I am he's like 35.
This is the last year I'm working out. Damn it,
I swear,
I am not lifting weights next year. So you better cash that card in right now.
I can't
now.
Be working out the way I'm working out, which by the way is to a level to play NFL football right now. Today, D'Amico, if you're okay, but never again.
So yeah, that's as you're saying that, it is very funny the idea that he would work out to a level to play NFL football to then not play NFL football. I mean, I guess there are people who just want to be insanely in shape. I'm not one of them, but I guess that could be his motivation. But I think this is kind of what the path you're going down, Sean. I think he has no intention to be there in training camp. He has no intention to be there for a preseason game.
Hell no.
He has no intention to be there in September. This is, all right, November 1st. Let's see what the Texans got going on. Oh, they're 7-2. They're looking good. Things are going well.
Will Anderson
let me dust off the jersey and hop on and chase this ring with them.
Yeah, Will Anderson pulled a hamstring. Oh, dire need.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth, Sean.
I pulled a hand. I purposely went with
ACL.
3-week injury.
Could have said stubbed his toe or something.
Yeah, he would have played through that. Come on.
Well, you
Jonathan Greenard did.
Bad.
Yeah. D'Nico Autry has a broken pinky finger. How about that, John? Does that
better? Yeah.
Okay.
He knew the club, but just on the pinky.
Yeah.
Just on the pinky. But yeah, I think there's going to be. The audio, like I said at the beginning of the segment, the audio we play kind of lends itself to the idea that he's not coming back. But I don't know. I read beyond that in that this is maybe a way of him trying to explain away, okay, you say you're coming back, but you haven't signed. Okay, you say you're coming back, but you're not here at training camp. Like, this is a way of him to kind of push those questions back till it's time to go to jump back in and play football. I mean, I don't know where you guys put the odds at, but I think if the Texans are winning, you know, they look good. They have, let's say, I don't know, after 9 games or 6-3 or better, they look good. And there aren't two great defensive tackles playing, then J.J. Watt is going to jump in and play some sub-package defensive tackle.
Hey, move over Foley Fatukasi.
Yeah, exactly. It's Foley and Tim Settle. Like, he can push one of those guys out. Isn't that already kind of dire? You're playing Foley and Tim Settle. I think that might qualify as dire already.
A little bit disrespectful. A little bit. Tim Settle's been working his whole life to be a defensive
Has guy. He been working out to be in NFL shape?
I hope so.
Oh, settle down now.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right, John. All right, we're going to go to break now. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. I can't continue that. No, don't do that. You can't go swish or perfect or say no. No, don't make the money sign. No. All right, we're going to break.
We're having a good conversation. Okay,
I'm just turning off Cam's microphone, putting my hand over. He's going to have to sit in the shame for a couple minutes. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Okay, get back on air.
Listening to ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Get ready. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is almost here. It's Black Friday in July, and it's coming your way. For 5 days only, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and free shipping on everything. Yes, everything right to your door. So mark your calendars. Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale starts July 24th. Shop everything home at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.